But I rode to the foot of Orthonk, and came to the stairs of Saruman, and there he met me, and led me up to his high chamber. He wore a ring on his finger. "So you have come, Gandalf," he said to me gravely, but in his eyes there seemed to be a white light, as if a cold laughter was in his heart. "Yes, I have come," I said. "I have come for your aid, Saruman the White," and that title seemed to anger him. "Have you indeed, Gandalf the Grey?" he scoffed. "For aid? It has seldom been heard of that Gandalf the Grey sought for aid, one so cunning and so wise, wandering about the lands and concerning himself in every business, whether it belongs to him or not." I looked at him and wondered. "But if I am not deceived," said I, "things are now moving which will require the union of all our strengths." "That may be so," he said, "but the thought is late in coming to you. How long, I wonder, have you concealed from me, the head of the council, a matter of greatest import? What brings you now from your lurking place in the Shire?" "The Nine have come forth again," I answered. "They have crossed the river, so Radagast said to me." "Radagast the Brown," laughed Saruman, and he no longer concealed his scorn. "Radagast the Bird-Tamer, Radagast the Simple, Radagast the Fool. Yet he had just the wit to play the part that I set him. For you have come, and that was all the purpose of my message. And here you will stay, Gandalf the Grey, and rest from journeys. For I am Saruman the Wise, Saruman Ringmaker, Saruman of many colours." I looked then and saw that his robes, which had seemed white, were not so, but were woven of all colours, and if he moved they shimmered and changed hue, so that the eye was bewildered. "I liked white better," I said. "White," he sneered. "It serves as a beginning. White cloth may be dyed, the white page can be overwritten, and the white light can be broken." "In which case it is no longer white," I said, "and he that breaks a thing to find out what it is has left the path of wisdom."
"You need not speak to me as to one of the fools that you take for friends," said he. "I have not brought you hither to be instructed by you, but to give you a choice."
He drew himself up then, and began to declaim, as if he were making a speech long rehearsed.
"The elder days are gone, the middle days are passing, the younger days are beginning. The time of the elves is over, but our time is at hand, the world of men, which we must rule. But we must have power, power to order all things as we will, for that good which only the wise can see. And listen, Gandalf, my old friend and helper," he said, coming near, and speaking now in a softer voice. "I said we, for we it may be, if you will join with me. A new power is rising. Against it the old allies and policies will not avail us at all. There is no hope left in elves or dying Numenor. This, then, is one choice before you, before us. We may join with that power. It would be wise, Gandalf. There is hope that way. Its victory is at hand, and there will be rich reward for those that aided it. As the power grows, its proved friends will also grow, and the wise, such as you and I, may with patience come at last to direct its courses, to control it. We can bide our time. We can keep our thoughts in our hearts, deploring many evils done by the way, but approving the high and ultimate purpose, knowledge, rule, order. All the things that we have so far striven in vain to accomplish, hindered rather than helped by our weak or idle friends. There need not be, there would not be, any real change in our designs, only in our means." "Saruman," I said, "I have heard speeches of this kind before, but only in the mouths of emissaries sent from Mordor to deceive the ignorant. I cannot think that you brought me so far only to weary my ears." He looked at me sidelong, and paused a while, considering. "Well, I see that this wise course does not commend itself to you," he said. "Not yet. Not if some better way can be contrived."
He came and laid his hand on my arm.
"And why not, Gandalf?" he whispered. "Why not? The ruling ring. If we could command that, then the power would pass to us. That is in truth why I brought you here. For I have many eyes in my service, and I believe that you know where this precious thing now lies. Is it not so? Or why do the Nine ask for the Shire, and what is your business there?"
As he said this, a lust which he could not conceal shone suddenly in his eyes.
"Saruman," I said, standing away from him, "only one hand at a time can wield the ring, and you know that well, so do not trouble to say we. But I would not give it, nay, I would not give even news of it to you, now that I learn your mind. You were head of the council, but you have unmasked yourself at last. Well, the choices are, it seems, to submit to Sauron or to yourself. I will take neither. Have you others to offer?"
He was cold now and perilous.
"Yes," he said. "I did not expect you to show wisdom, even in your own behalf, but I gave you the chance of aiding me willingly, and so saving yourself much trouble and pain. The third choice is to stay here until the end."
"Until what end?"
"Until you reveal to me where the one may be found, I may find means to persuade you, or until it is found in your despite, and the ruler has time to turn to lighter matters, to devise, say, a fitting reward for the hindrance and insolence of Gandalf the Grey."
"That may not prove to be one of the lighter matters," said I. He laughed at me, for my words were empty, and he knew it.
"They took me and they set me alone on the pinnacle of Orthanc, in the place where Saruman was accustomed to watch the stars. There is no descent save by a narrow stair of many thousand steps, and the valley below seems far away. I looked on it and saw that, whereas it had once been green and fair, it was now filled with pits and forges. Wolves and orcs were housed in Isengard, for Saruman was mustering a great force on his own account, in rivalry of Sauron, and not in his service yet. Over all his works a dark smoke hung and wrapped itself about the sides of Orthanc. I stood alone on an island in the clouds, and I had no chance of escape, and my days were bitter. I was pierced with cold, and I had but little room in which to pace to and fro, brooding on the coming of the riders to the north. That the Nine had indeed arisen, I felt assured, apart from the words of Saruman, which might be lies. Long ere I came to Isengard, I had heard tidings by the way that could not be mistaken. Fear was ever in my heart for my friends in the Shire, but still I had some hope. I hoped that Frodo had set forth at once, as my letter had urged, and that he had reached Rivendell before the deadly pursuit began. And both my fear and my hope proved ill-founded, for my hope was founded on a fat man in Bree, and my fear was founded on the cunning of Sauron. But fat men who sell ale have many calls to answer, and the power of Sauron is still less than fear makes it. But in the circle of Isengard, trapped and alone, it was not easy to think that the hunters before whom all had fled or fallen would falter in the Shire far away.
"I saw you," cried Frodo. "You were walking backwards and forwards. The moon shone in your hair."
Gandalf paused astonished and looked at him. "It was only a dream," said Frodo,
"but it suddenly came back to me. I'd quite forgotten it. It came some time ago, after I left the Shire, I think."
"Then it was late in coming," said Gandalf, "as you will see. I was in an evil plight, and those who know me will agree that I have seldom been in such need, and do not bear such misfortune well. Gandalf the Grey caught like a fly in a spider's treacherous web.
Yet even the most subtle spiders may leave a weak thread. At first I feared, as Saruman no doubt intended, that Radagast had also fallen. Yet I had caught no hint of anything wrong in his voice or in his eye at our meeting. If I had, I should never have gone to Isengard, or I should have gone more warily. So Saruman guessed, and he had concealed his mind and deceived his messenger. It would have been useless in any case to try and win over the honest Radagast to treachery. He sought me in good faith, and so persuaded me. That was the undoing of Saruman's plot, for Radagast knew no reason why he should not do as I asked, and he rode away towards Mirkwood, where he had many friends of old. And the eagles of the mountains went far and wide, and they saw many things, the gathering of wolves and the mustering of orcs, and the nine riders going hither and thither in the lands, and they heard news of the escape of Gollum, and they sent a messenger to bring these tidings to me. So it was that when summer waned, there came a night of moon, and Gwaihir the Windlord, swiftest of the great eagles, came unlooked for to Orthanc, and he found me standing on the pinnacle. Then I spoke to him, and he bore me away, before Saruman was aware. I was far from Isengard, ere the wolves and orcs issued from the gate to pursue me. "How far can you bear me?" I said to Gwaihir. "Many leagues," said he, "but not to the ends of the earth. I was sent to bear tidings, not burdens." "Then I must have a steed on land," I said, "and a steed surpassingly swift, for I have never had such a need of haste before." "Then I will bear you to Edoras, where the Lord of Rohan sits in his halls," he said. "For that is not very far off," and I was glad. "For in the Riddermark of Rohan, the Rohirrim, the horse lords dwell, and there are no horses like those that are bred in that great vale between the misty mountains and the white." "Are the men of Rohan still to be trusted, do you think?" I said to Gwaihir, for the treason of Saruman had shaken my faith. "They pay a tribute of horses," he answered, "and send many yearly to Mordor, or so it is said. But they are not yet under the yoke. But if Saruman has become evil, as you say, then their doom cannot be long delayed. He set me down in the land of Rohan ere dawn, and now I have lengthened my tale over long. The rest must be more brief. In Rohan I found evil already at work, the lies of Saruman, and the king of the land would not listen to my warnings. He bade me take a horse and be gone, and I chose one much to my liking, but little to his. I took the best horse in his land, and I have never seen the like of him." "Then he must be a noble beast indeed," said Aragorn, "and it grieves me more than many tidings that might seem worse, to learn that Sauron levies such tribute. It was not so when last I was in that land."
"Nor is it now, I will swear," said Boromir. "It's a lie that comes from the enemy. I know the men of Rohan, true and valiant, our allies, dwelling still in the lands that we gave them long ago."
"The shadow of Mordor lies on distant lands," answered Aragorn. "Saruman has fallen under it. Rohan is beset. Who knows what you will find there, if ever you return?"
"Not this, at least," said Boromir, "that they will buy their lives with horses. They love their horses next to their kin, and not without reason, for the horses of the Riddermark come from the fields of the north, far from the shadow, and their race, as that of their masters, is descended from the free days of old."
"True indeed," said Gandalf. "And there is one among them that might have been foaled in the morning of the world. The horses of the Nine cannot vie with him. Tireless, swift as the flowing wind, Shadowfax they called him. By day his coat glistens like silver, and by night it is like a shade, and he passes unseen. Light is his footfall. Never before had any man mounted him, but I took him and I tamed him, and so speedily he bore me that I reached the Shire when Frodo was on the Barrow-downs, though I set out from Rohan only when he set out from Hobbiton. But fear grew in me as I rode. Ever as I came north, I heard tidings of the riders, and though I gained on them day by day, they were ever before me. They had divided their forces, I learned. Some remained on the eastern borders, not far from the Greenway, and some invaded the Shire from the south. I came to Hobbiton, and Frodo had gone, but I had words with old Gamgee, many words and few to the point. He had much to say about the shortcomings of the new owners of Bag End. "I can't abide changes," said he, "not at my time of life, and least of all changes for the worst." "Changes for the worst," he repeated many times. "Worst is a bad word," I said to him, "and I hope you do not live to see it." But amidst his talk I gathered at last that Frodo had left Hobbiton less than a week before, and that a black horseman had come to the hill the same evening. Then I rode on in fear. I came to Buckland and found it in uproar, as busy as a hive of ants that has been stirred with a stick. I came to the house at Crick Hollow, and it was broken open and empty, but on the threshold there lay a cloak that had been Frodo's. Then for a while hope left me, and I did not wait to gather news, or I might have been comforted. But I rode on the trail of the riders. It was hard to follow, for it went many ways, and I was at a loss. But it seemed to me that one or two had ridden towards Bree, and that way I went, for I thought of words that might be said to the innkeeper. "Butterbur, they call him," thought I. "If this delay was his fault, I will melt all the butter in him. I will roast the old fool over a slow fire." He expected no less, and when he saw my face he fell down flat and began to melt on the spot.
"What did you do to him?" cried Frodo in alarm. "He was really very kind to us, and did all that he could."
Gandalf laughed. "Don't be afraid," he said. "I didn't bite, and I barked very little. So overjoyed was I by the news that I got out of him when he stopped quaking, that I embraced the old fellow. How it happened I could not then guess, but I learned that you had been in Bree the night before, and had gone off that morning with Strider." "Strider!" I cried, shouting for joy. "Yes, sir, I'm afraid so, sir," said Butterbur, mistaking me. "He got at them, in spite of all that I could do, and they took up with him. They behaved very queer all the time they were here. Wilful, you might say." "Ass, fool, thrice worthy and beloved Barleyman," said I. "It's the best news I have had since midsummer. It's worth a gold piece at the least. May your beer be laid under an enchantment of surpassing excellence for 7 years," said I. "Now I can take a night's rest, the first since I have forgotten when." So I stayed there that night, wondering much what had become of the riders, for only of two had there yet been any news in Bree, it seemed. But in the night we heard more. Five at least came from the west, and they threw down the gates and passed through Bree like a howling wind, and the Bree folk were still shivering and expecting the end of the world. I got up before dawn and went after them. I don't know, but it seems clear to me that this is what happened. Their captain remained in secret away south of Bree, while two rode ahead through the village, and four more invaded the Shire. But when these were foiled in Bree and at Crick Hollow, they returned to their captain with tidings, and so left the road unguarded for a while, except by their spies. The captain then sent some eastward straight across country, and he himself with the rest rode along the road in great wrath. I galloped to Weathertop like a gale, and I reached it before sundown on my second day from Bree, and they were there before me. They drew away from me, for they felt the coming of my anger, and they dared not face it while the sun was in the sky. But they closed round at night, and I was besieged at the hilltop, in the old ring of Amon Sul. I was hard put to it indeed. Such light and flame cannot have been seen on Weathertop since the war beacons of old. At sunrise I escaped and fled towards the north. I could not hope to do more. It was impossible to find you, Frodo, in the wilderness, and it would have been folly to try with all the nine at my heels, so I had to trust to Aragorn. But I hoped to draw some of them off, and yet reach Rivendell ahead of you, and send out help. Four riders did indeed follow me, but they turned back after a while, and made for the ford, it seems. That helped a little, for there were only five, not nine, when your camp was attacked. I reached here at last by a long, hard road, up the Horwell, and through the Ettenmoors, and down from the north. It took me, Lily, 14 days from Weathertop, for I could not ride among the rocks of the Troll Fells, and Shadowfax departed. I sent him back to his master, but a great friendship has grown between us, and if I have need, he will come at my call. But so it was that I came to Rivendell only 3 days before the ring, and news of its peril had already been brought here, which proved well indeed. And that, Frodo, is the end of my account. May Elrond and the others forgive the length of it, but such a thing has not happened before, that Gandalf broke tryst and did not come when he promised. An account to the ring-bearer of so strange an event was required, I think. Well, the tale is now told, from first to last. Here we all are, and here is the ring. But we have not yet come any nearer to our purpose. What shall we do with it?